There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1007, August 28, 2023. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Max making Mars music. Pump up the volume, put the needle on the record. Ball stay in the court at Haas F1. Honey Badger hands sweet debut to Kiwi. And one F1 reject replaces another in Indy cars. We shall explain. Gladly, back to you, El Jefe.
Thank you. On this program, Max wins another crazy race, and what a race it was. Fernando gets the votes for his super machismo drive to second. Stroll, too busy texting Andre Agassi. And Nigel Mansell is putting everything up for auction, his entire collection of his career. I've seen the photographs. I mean, we're talking tons and tons of stuff. It's unbelievable. And it's going to make billions and billions of dollars. And this week's interview, we went deep, deep down into the cavern of the F1 Weekly archives. And we found young Nico Hülkenberg, 2008, originally aired on podcast number 283. This is a great interview. And Nas, we'll talk about that further in the program. And I must remind everybody that, yes, we do need your contributions to keep this program up on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you'll want to. Nas, what a fantastic weekend race. I mean, it was crazy. It was awesome. And the people that were most machismo were successful.
Oh, absolutely, sir. And that is what normally the case is. As they always say in racing, cream rises to the top. And we have been seeing the same cream for quite a while. But Mr. Rogers, I got here late Saturday night, so I missed the quali section, which I had to, you know, watch later on. But that's okay. So it's good to be back on the right course. Today there is a hurricane warning. So let's see what that will bring. I have to say, California is the best place in the USFA. I had a really great time. The weather was good. Food was very good. And of course, when you can get to see the host in person, face to face, that's just the highlight of the trip. And, you know, here, something I discovered, and this could be our next, you know, we used to go to Taiban for F1 Weekly monthly meeting. You remember that?
How could I forget? L10.
L10 was your favorite. So I found a new place before taking to the friendly skies. And we had my friend Jimbo and I, we had a delicious and fully loaded. Normally we do in-flight burritos, but this time it was a pre-flight breakfast burrito right by the airport. And it was humongous, like a jumbo jet. The joint is called Kenny's Cafe. You should take David Tapia there. And it's run by an elderly Vietnamese gentleman. He takes pictures of all who come in, and they are plastered all over the walls and ceiling. So, perfect place for you. The place even has models of old racing cars, including a Warsteiner DTM car, which was very, very surprising. But for food, we go to what we really enjoy devouring, Formula One. Motor racing is very exciting, as we found out over the weekend, when you don't know the result before the race begins. But with all the mayhem, rain, yellow and red flags, at the end, what we got was more of the same. Nobody should be surprised, apart from Sergio. The beat goes on for Red Bull and their Mad Max of the Thunderdome and Autodrome, which is happening this weekend. Seb's record of 9 consecutive wins now has company. Very, very impressive work by this 25-year-old. One more win, another formality, we will have a new track record. All this will be very good for the sport and, of course, for the Orange Army. I am enjoying Max's sheer brilliance, no question about it. Now, if somebody can topple him in a race, fair and square, that will also be good for the sport. The question is, will it be Ferrari, will it be McLaren, will it be Aston Martin, or will it be Mercedes? Que sera, sera. Thanks to Max, the future is not ours to see. Talk has been, if Red Bull will win all the races in the second half, I think it should be more like if Red Bull of Max Verstappen will win all the remaining races. The way Max is performing, I think the only thing that will stop him is if the GP2 engine goes down, blowed up. Now, beginning of the season, you were very excited, and so was I, because your machismo in Aston Martin had a view to kill. Now they are more like dance into the fire. This is funny. There is even talk of his teammate being more interested in playing at Flushing Meadows than in Formula One. I don't know how true that is, but what say you on the winning performance and what we saw in the rain?
Awesome performance. I mean, this race was so great, I had to watch it again, and I will watch it again. Not only that, but the pre-race was interesting. We didn't have any Martin Brundle. I guess he's on vacation, but the way they talked about Max and how much he's impacted the economy of the country, the people. I mean, he is the big Dutch kahuna. I mean, he has changed people's lives. It's unbelievable. Karting is now exploding. Every little Dutch kid wants to be Max Verstappen. So he is really a big deal. The king and queen of the House of Orange were there. I mean, it was just a great race. And I mean, even the national anthem was awesome. I mean, and the Dutch, they didn't stop. I mean, they danced when it rained. They danced when it poured. They sung. They did not stop. I mean, even the marshals were dancing. Nasser, I have never seen such a festive atmosphere in Holland in my life.
Yeah, this was very exciting. And speaking of the economies, not everybody is thrilled and some are ticked off at Max because he is not paying any taxes since he is a resident of Monaco. And it really goes back to Jackie Stewart being all Scottish and all the Scottish dress and all the Scottish colors, which is fine and dandy. And as soon as he start making money, he bailed out of his beloved land to Switzerland so he doesn't have to pay Her Majesty's taxes. So, to each his own, what can we do? Okay, sir, shall we move on to Quickie on Quali?
Absolutely. Quali was just as exciting as the race. I'm telling you, I don't know what these Dutch are eating, but it's probably delicious.
Yes. Racing is a tough business. You take the win as they come. Here's looking at you, Mike Massey. I was going to say Max, but Max has won a lot of races on his own, so we cannot use his name here. And you take the debut as they come. Here's looking at you, Liam Lawson. Just like Bogie and Bacall, Lawson sailing into his own F1 Key Largo on the Dutch Riviera as Red Bull releases their latest catch into the piranha pool. And more on this later. Man at the top of the timesheet in FP1 was Holly of Holland, everybody's darling, taking walk on the winning side race after race. Here's looking at you, Sebastian Vettel. Lando Norris set the fastest time in FP2. In free practice 2, both Australian drivers crashed in the same place, which was really bizarre. Piastri was okay, but compadre Daniel Ricciardo broke his hand, and we wish him speedy recovery. Q3, number 33 was on top of the tree. Max pole winning time was 1 minute 10.567, and here it was obvious where the sea waves and the sea winds were blowing come Sunday. Low-hanging fruit for second and third were picked up by Norris and George Russell. The McLaren driver's time was 1:11.104. That is basically half a second slower. Now, we all know Mr. Rogers. It's hard to beat Max when you clock the same time as him in quali. But if you are off by half a second, then you are man of La Mancha and need to sing in the shower on Sunday morning, dream the impossible dream. Best a Mercedes man could do was George Russell, 1:11.294, sharing second row with him with a very impressive performance and time of 1:11.419, Alex Albon. Now, did Alex and Williams on row 2 surprise you, sir?
Very much. I mean, the Williams is obviously making some great progress here. It's fast, and Albon is definitely extremely talented. His only problem was Max Verstappen and running into Lewis Hamilton and getting taken out of the race a number of times when he was at Red Bull, and that really messed up his career. But other than that, it's very impressive, and Mr. Sargeant, really, I know he's been talked to, and he's got to close that gap to Albon very quickly.
Yes, and Mr. Pegler, our familiar member on the West Coast, tells me that the Williams is a rocket ship in straight line, so he's expecting Alex on the podium. That'll be nice. Now, row 3 was Habla Español, Machismo ahead of Carlito, but 1 full second behind the Dutch Matador. 2 P's on row 4, Perez and Piastri. Checo was 1.3 second off the pace of the other car from the same garage. Piastri was 0.8 second off the pace of his teammate, which would be Norris. Top 10 was completed by Charles Leclerc, 2 seconds slower than Max, and this is a team that was fighting for championship a couple of years ago. Prancing horse losing steam as the season progresses. Let's hope Mañana in Maranello is brighter, which will be good for the sport. And we don't want to see the talent that is Charles Leclerc become Machismo of Monaco. Talking of Logan Sargeant making his first appearance in Q3, Logan Sargeant qualified 10th, over 2 seconds slower than teammate Albon, which of course people will notice. Now, this was the first time in 30 years that an American driver qualified in the top 10, so that's very good. Here's looking at you, Mikey, and it was at this same track way back in 1978 that an American driver won a Grand Prix for the last time, and that was Mikey's Papito, Mario. Now, in the absence of Latifi, debutant Lawson was unable to out-qualify any driver. His loosey-goosey teammate Yuki was 14th on the grid. And you may ask yourself, Car 44, where are you? According to Toto, focus is fully on 2024. The black Mercedes is really having a hard time coming out of the black hole of Calcutta, which is really a shame because he is one of the very few drivers who can give a Max run for his money in a competitive machinery. Some of us have not forgotten the last 4 races of the 2021 season, especially the Samba in Sao Paulo. But as they say at Yankee Stadium, yesterday's hits don't win today's game. So let's hope for a new dawn in Brackley in 2024. EP says a little more action, a little less conversation. What does the host say about Colley? And I have a very important question for you. How many races you think Max will be winning in a row if his teammate was Fernando Alonso?
Well, it would be pretty exciting, especially seeing Fernando in the Red Bull, because that's a pretty fast car. And Fernando seems to like fast cars and gets very comfortable. And then he starts thinking about doing a little nosedive here on Max, a little Uno here on Max. I'm telling you, it would be a competitive and awesome competition. But dreams are simply for dreams. And that's not going to happen. But I have to admit, all of a sudden, the Aston Martin was woke up. And I just don't know what happened to Lance Stroll. I mean, he seemed to be completely forgotten. It wasn't even spoken about very much. So tennis is a wonderful sport, Nasser.
Yeah, that's very good. And, you know, he can be in Wimbledon winning the finals for O Canada. That'll be interesting. But I think what helped Aston Martin, and especially Nando, is the changing conditions. And it's, you know, like they say, the rain is the great equalizer. And, I was hoping, you know, that if this guy wins this race, it will be quite a day. But it really, and the reason I asked that question, it answers the question about who is a lucky driver. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
I do indeed. And Max, I mean, you have to give it to his father. Max was brought into Formula One at a pretty good, awesome time. The planets were lined up. Yes, and this is going to go on. Well, I know LCH and everybody else thinks this could go on until deep into 2026. And by then, of course, LCH and Fernando will have become partners in a restaurant chain, which will be all over the globe, and they'll make millions.
You know what they should do if they're going to get into a business? As a tribute to their 2007, they should get in Europe, the franchise for In-N-Out.
Excellent idea. And don't forget to always ask for animal style.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Now, moving on to the race. Raindrops keep falling on the heads as they begin the opening lap. While Max was leading, Checo came into the pits on the second lap, and Machismo was already in second place behind Mighty Max, both in the pits for intermediate tires soon. Now, let me ask you a question. I was kind of surprised but Red Bull always does very smart strategy and thinking. Were you surprised when Sergio got into the pit lane very quickly?
Well, you know, I wasn't too surprised because sometimes they like to experiment with something with Checo first before they get Max pissed off, you know, because if they don't want to get Max pissed off, he's very, very testy. So, yeah, I think that was the right thing to do, to be honest.
Yeah, my reaction was, Red Bull doing what they always do, trying to cover one driver with the other. And we all know how it will end in the end, no matter what they do. But it was interesting. Now, lap 3, Checo in the lead from 7th on the grid. There were still 69 laps to go, and I knew he will get screwed by Max. Some may say Red Bull, or both. Lap 5, oh, this was hilarious. A movie we've seen many times before. Charles Leclerc comes into the pits, and the Scuderia is looking for Pirelli Chantaratos. Did that amuse you?
It's always amusing. Listen, they were in the back stirring the large pot of marinara. Leclerc knows that. You got to give him a couple of days' notice.
Yes, a couple of days' notice. But, you know, apparently he had told the team he was coming in when he had already taken the pit entrance, and then the team advised him to stay out. Remember at one of the races also last year, a year or two ago, he came into the pits, and that's when they are telling him stay out, and he got real ticked off.
I do remember that. They were all playing dominoes.
In and out, they are just not sizzling with high-performance flavor. And, of course, they mean Team Ferrari. Lap 12, Max in for slicks. The undercut to slit teammate's throat. Checo's chimichanga was deep-fried when he came in a lap later. And back on the track, he was numero dos. Number 2, and it was when he came back on the track behind Max, I just knew Sergio Perez was not going to win this race. Lap 16, yellow flag and safety car as your favorite and fellow American Logan Sargeant loses it and crashed out of the race. You know, this has not been a good weekend for him, and I don't think anybody was expecting him to rattle the cage of Alex Albon in his first season. But he's not really... I would love to see him have another season, but it's not looking very promising for him. What say you?
I agree with you. I mean... He's got to maybe see it, how do you say it, a mind doctor. Sometimes you need to just a little therapy, a little talking to. People can change and adjust. So Logan needs to adjust as soon as possible because he will lose his seat. You got Schumacher waiting to pounce. So it's tough.
Well, he's not the only one.
Oh, I know. I mean, that's Formula One. You either perform... Oh, tennis is a nice sport, Nasser.
Well, his sister is in horse jumping and whatever, show jumping, whatever it is called. And I'm sure his family owns quite a few nice thoroughbreds. So instead of a prancing horse, you know, on four wheels, he can go on a prancing horse with two legs, kind of like Rubinho. Okay, sir, I do have a question. With the changing condition, rain, not rain, heavy rain, did you at any time think we may have a non-Red Bull victory during the race?
Of course. Of course. I thought this is it. Alonso is going to put Aston Martin on the top of the mark. I mean, for a minute there, I had to take a little break. I walked away and I go, you know, Fernando could pull this off. And then I woke up.
Lap 43, Charles Leclerc was summoned to the DNF chapel by Scuderia Ferrari. Lap 52, nice ding-dong between two hombres from Viva España. Always a pleasure to see Nando getting feisty. And I enjoy his fights with Lewis. Man, I have to say one thing between about Lewis and Alonso. Despite being teammate in 2007, over the years, in the last few years, we've seen them battle very hard. You know, the Hungarian Rhapsody that Nando pulled out so his teammate could win a race, that was like super, super impressive. But they don't run into each other. Same thing cannot be said between Lewis and Max. What say you?
Well, that's true. Fernando and Lewis, I mean, when you put those two careers together, it's a lot of experience. It's a lot of machismo-ness. And I think there's a lot of respect. I think these guys in the future could become very close friends because of that relationship. Not only that, but, I mean, there's going to be a movie about it. It's going to be awesome, Nasser.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of the rivalry at McLaren between Niki Lauda and Alain Prost. It was very civil. It was very clean in 1984 when Lauda won his third and final championship by half a point. All throughout the season, it was very clean. But same thing cannot be said in 1988 when Alain Prost had another teammate with the yellow helmet.
It was exciting, though.
Oh, yeah, it was very, very exciting. Okay, sir, lap 61, here comes the rain again. And drivers into the pit lane. Max retains his lead on inters, followed by Checo and Nando. Ocon, only driver on full wets in 11th. Checo goes off and Machismo second. 9 laps to go, heavy rain is falling and Max in for full wets. Guan Yu Zhou goes into the wall of voodoo and we have a red flag on lap 64 of 72. You know, I have to say, it is better to red flag the race and then have a start till the end than throw a yellow flag and for 5 laps and then do a crazy. Last thing we want is Abu Dhabi 2021 ever again. And I was thinking, you know, if they have to do a, even in Indy cars, especially in Formula One, if they have to do it, maybe if it's less than 4 laps remaining, and especially if it's raining, I think it'll be a better idea that to freeze the last 10 places, so only the top 10 cars run. Maybe less cars, less chances of mayhem, but that's just an idea. What do you think?
That's a great idea. I think that's a very, very good idea, especially if there's only under 5 laps. I think that's a very good idea. I think that could be proposed for a lot of things. But I have to admit, the restart, everybody was fine with the rolling restart. Max nailed it, except that Fernando, I don't know if you saw it, but he had a moment, and he looked for the lunge, but he decided it's just too risky, and we must be adults. But very impressive rain driving. I mean, everybody who was good in the rain was good in the rain. Hulkenberg, Lewis, everybody. I mean, Mercedes had a lot of problems strategically, and they were bickering a little bit. I don't think Mercedes does as well as they used to when conditions become mixed and crazy.
Yeah, what you just said about Alonso trying to do a lunge, that's, you know, racing with the head, not racing with the heart. It's just, it goes back to his race in Abu Dhabi where he lost the championship because he couldn't get past Petrov, Vitaly Petrov in a Renault. I am 100% sure to this day and always will be that if it was Ayrton Senna in that car or a Michael Schumacher or even a Max Verstappen, only one of them would have finished or both of them would not have finished. You know, these drivers would have forced the issue. I think you will agree with me on this.
I do agree.
Oh, thank you, sir. I feel better now.
Gracias.
Yeah, de nada. After a 45-minute delay, we have a six-lap dash to a record-setting finish. Alonso in second and desperately seeking first win in over a decade. Last victory was on home soil 2013. As commentator Alex Jake said on telly, man with 32 Grand Prix victories is right behind car number 33. And what we had in the closing laps in misty conditions was what I call essence of motor racing. Absolutely beautiful. What a day it would have been had Alonso taken victory for Aston Martin. As they say in the song, you can't hurry love, you just have to wait. And when you have a home and race record ahead of you, it may be a long hot summer, and you may not get that elusive 33rd win and 3rd championship from here to eternity. But misery loves company. His BFF from 2007, Lewis Hamilton was hustling another Spaniard, Carlos Sainz Jr., to get into the top 5. The thrill of the chase by both Alonso and Hamilton was very, very exciting to watch, and they all kept it clean. But wait, there was more misery. Sergio Perez got a 5-second penalty for speeding in the pit lane. So sad. He needs to speed in the fast lane to beat his teammate. Otherwise, it will be a long, hot siesta. Top 10. Winner, Mr. Max Verstappen, matching Seb's record of 9 wins in a row from the 2013 season. So far this season, he has 11 wins from 13 races. In the other two, he was second to Sergio. Quite an achievement. Second, Fernando Alonso. This was interesting. He also set a new record. He beats Michael Schumacher's record of time between first and last podium. You know, his first podium was when? Well, he came in 2001, right? I don't know if he was on the podium then, but he got his first win in 2003, right?
Correct.
Hungary. And you know what is interesting? This guy has not won a race in a decade, and he's still considered as one of the most competitive drivers. Not just considered, but displays on the track on a regular basis. But it's a shame he's not in a competitive machinery. But, you know, Mr. Rogers, you sleep in the bed you make, and if you make a futon, which he did, then it can be tough sometimes. Well, let's see what happens in the next two seasons. Okay, third man on the podium, Pierre Gasly. First podium for the Alpine driver since Azerbaijan 2021. And he was very, very excited, as he should be. Fourth, Sergio Perez. He was on the podium in the previous two races. And I think while Max has 11 wins, the number of podiums Sergio has, I think, is 7. So he's like totally outclassed by... You know, I'll tell you what surprises me, and I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago. When he first joined, I mean, there were some people... Now we're talking about senior Formula One journalists, how he has a chance to become Mexico's first world champion against Max Verstappen. And I said, you got to be kidding me. And I do remember when Gerhard Berger came into Senna's teammate, some people thought, wow, he's going to give run for the money to Ayrton Senna. But everybody has the right to their opinion. Fifth, Carlos Sainz Jr., only Ferrari in the points. Now, he is still looking for his first podium of the season after 13 races, and he's driving for the most successful team in Formula One of all time. So, you know, I think there will be some more shake-up at Ferrari. Sixth, Lewis Hamilton. Now, interestingly, like Max, he has scored in each and every race of the season so far, but unlike Max, has not won a race this season, and also did not win last season, unfortunately. Seventh, Lando Norris, second successive seventh place finish for the boy from Bristol. I have a feeling that he may be the first non-Red Bull winner this season. Not many races remaining, but if Max or Checo do something and don't finish the race, then I think Lando has the best chance. What say you, Senor?
Perhaps. You have to have a perfect race to win, and that's tough to do. Red Bull is very good at it. And I think Aston Martin has discovered something. Forget Stroll, but I think Aston and Fernando could be pretty fast at Monza. So there's always hope, Nasser.
You're saying forget Stroll. The question is, who remembered him?
I'm trying to be nice to some people, Nasser.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, the neighbors to the north. That's a good idea. Okay, sir. Eighth, Alex Albon. First point scoring finish in the last three races. But what was impressive, and I could not believe when they mentioned this was a 72-lap race, all sorts of condition, he did the first 45 laps on soft tires. So that was like something what Sergio Perez used to do at Sauber, if you recall. Ninth, Oscar Piastri. Fifth point scoring finish for the man from Melbourne, Australia. We have a Melbourne in Florida also, which is not too far from Tampa. Tenth and final point picked up by Monsieur Esteban Ocon. Third in Monte Carlo is the only podium this season so far for the French driver. Now, fastest lap, this was very interesting. Max, Fernando is faster than you over one lap. Machismo was also voted driver of the race by F1 fans. This must have been very good news for you.
It's great news for everybody. The guy is over 40. I mean, I'm telling you, as you know, we're all getting older, Nasser, and it's hope. It's wonderful to see somebody at that age performing up against a 25-year-old. I mean, it's really impressive stuff. Now, I understand these people have physios, they exercise, but some people do kick it up a notch.
Yeah, you know, since he's trying so hard for over a decade to win a race, if they do a remake of the movie The 40-Year-Old Virgin, maybe he should be the star of that movie.
I'm sure Pedro de la Rosa is working on that.
That's good. Okay, so now let's take a look at the championship. Leading the way by a wide margin, Max, 339 points. Numero dos is segundo, Sergio Perez, second, 201 points. Wake me up before you go, go. Don't leave me hanging on like a yo-yo. Third with 168 points is a driver who has been awake and alert, everybody's favorite, and has been alert since 2007, the one and only Machismo Fernando Alonso. His BFF from that season is fourth in the championship with 156 points, Lewis Hamilton. Carlos Sainz Jr. completes the top five with 102 points. Sir, before we talk a little bit about the debutant, Liam Lawson, any final thoughts on the Grand Prix of Grote Prix on Nederland?
Once again, a fantastic race. I think the Dutch put on a wonderful show. And Max has just got these people so hyped up that they just can't stop dancing. The whole country is dancing. They're probably still dancing. It's very impressive that Max has really brought so much happiness to so many Dutch people.
You know, it's so interesting. The nation of Germany, you know, dominant in Grand Prix racing since 1910, 1920, Mercedes, Auto Union, Bernd Rosemeyer, Rudolf Graziola, Mercedes sports cars and Formula One in the 50s. It took them a very long time before they had a world champion in Michael Schumacher, but this guy went non-stop, seven championships. You know, it was amazing. And then nation of France, where the first Grand Prix took place in 1906, home to Renault and Bugatti and Michelin and, you know, Reims and Rouen, famous tracks. They have one world champion, Le Professeur. So anytime a driver is coming from these countries, it's just going through the roof. And same with Viva España, Machismo. I mean, till Carlos Sainz won the British Grand Prix some years ago, he was the only Spanish Grand Prix winner. And now we have Max Verstappen. You know, there have been other Dutch drivers. His father was in Formula One. Then we have Roelof Wunderlich, and we had Jan Lemmers, and a few other also race. But now we have somebody who is just, I'm telling you, this guy is going to have 70 wins at the end of the 2025 season. And he's going to have his Mercedes moment when they have an engine, different engine partner in 2026. But wouldn't it be amazing that a kid who just, like 10 years ago we met in Las Vegas in karting, in 2 years he's going to have 70 Grand Prix wins and hopefully 5 World Championship. Isn't that increíble, senor?
It is incredible. And that was what one of the conversations that was on the pre-race show on Sky. They interviewed Dutch people, and Max has changed their lives, and a number of them were pretty smart to appreciate and have fun to be in this particular moment, in this particular place in time, to witness this unbelievable talent. So I appreciate it. I think it's a great time for Formula One. I don't think Max's domination is hurting Formula One, because that race was fantastic. And everybody knew Max would probably win, but to win with that much control in such crazy conditions shows you why Max is dominating. So it all equalizes, folks. And like the Dutch people said, appreciate what you're seeing, because it will go away one day.
Yes, of course. Nothing is forever. Okay, sir. Now we go to the debutant, Liam Lawson. He becomes driver number 491 to start a Formula One championship race. He is also the 10th driver from his country, New Zealand, and 16th Red Bull Junior to race in Formula One. So basically 13 have been slaughtered badly. Yes, he did not do a 1991 Spa like M. Schumacher, M as in Michael, but at the same time he did not do a 2022 Monaco like M. Schumacher, M as in Mick. He brought the car home in one piece, finished ahead of much more experienced and bullet-trained teammate Yuki Tsunoda-san. AlphaTauri has confirmed Lawson will race at Monza also, and if he can do a Spa 1991 in his second try at Parco Monza, then we may never see Honey Badger again in Formula One. But you know what? It's very, very rare that we see drivers do what Michael Schumacher did in 1991. And, you know, people always say Lewis came into the best car, which is very true. But several other drivers came in a car that was equally competitive, not just with McLaren, but different teams over the years. But it's very special talent that will do the Clint Eastwood program certain impact. But we wish everybody all the best, and we'll see how the results turn out. Now we come to points to ponder. This was interesting, and you were talking about how the Dutch were celebrating before and during and after the race. With all the sanctions going on against Russia over the Ukraine situation, it was interesting to see Mr. André Rieu, who is also from the Netherlands, play Dmitri Shostakovich waltz number 2 before the race. It is a beautiful piece of music. I think sports, arts and culture should not be infected with politics or ideology. Ferrari has Robert Schwartzman, who is from St. Petersburg, Russia, doing testing under an Israeli license. What say you, amigo, on this issue, or would you like to take the Beethoven's fifth on this?
Well, I don't want to take the fifth, because I think music that was written a long time ago is fine, especially such a beautiful song. I mean, I don't have any problems with that. But until Russia leaves the Ukraine, I will support the Ukraine. And that's as far as I'm going to go in this statement, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you sharing. Okay, from Autosport magazine, we learned that after the Dutch Grand Prix, Lando Norris now has done more races, 95, than Alonso, who did 94 with McLaren. DC has the most races with McLaren, 150. Now, interestingly, JB, who is second with 136 races for McLaren, has done more races than LCH, who did 110 races in the Silver Machine before moving to Silver Arrows. And sir, with that, I think we should come to a Dasani break.
Good job, Nas. Yes, we still have Nico Hülkenberg to bring on the stage, so a little drink would be nice, so we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm Enzo Fittipaldi, and you guys are listening to F1 Weekly.
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads get you the F1Weekly.com website for the ads that interest you. From Ferrari swag to McLaren caps, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them, you know you want to.
Thank you, Yahoo Ads, and of course, keep up the good work, Stephen. Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the King, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And you mentioned earlier in the show a chat we had with Nico many years ago. So shall we play that interview now?
Yes, yes. Nico was so wonderful, young, already very successful in motorsports. So, yes, very good interview. Bring it on.
Yeah, you know, the late, great Mr. Dan Gurney once made a comment to me that in racing there are drivers who should succeed and do not, and there are some who should not succeed and do. And Nico Hülkenberg is definitely from the first group. His junior career is as impressive as Lewis and Charles Leclerc and George Russell, because I followed very closely. He won anything and everything, Formula 3, GP2, and he was at one time managed by Willy Weber, the gentleman who brought to us Michael Schumacher. And his performance, especially the race I will never forget, was the rain race at Sepang when he was in A1GP for Team Deutschland. So very, very great talent. Unfortunately, things have not worked out for him, but he's still slugging it out just like Machismo. So please enjoy this conversation with a young Nico Hülkenberg and a young Moore from days gone by. Okay, sir, and this interview, as you said, is with Nico Hülkenberg, 20 years old. Nico is competing this year in F3 Euro Series and was a race winner at Mugello in April, where this conversation took place. Nico is in good hands of Herr Willy Weber, and we all know he was manager to, or is manager to, Michael Schumacher also. If you are talented and well represented, you can go very far, as we have seen. Nico was born on August 19, 1987. After winning karting championships in Italy and Germany, he made his motor racing debut in style. He was on the Steve Farr program, winning the Formula BMW Germany Championship in his rookie year with Josef Kaufmann Racing. In 20 races, he scored 8 wins, 9 pole positions, and 14 podium finishes. In 2006 and 7 A1GP competition, he won his very first race in the opening round at Zandvoort, and with 8 other wins, helped Germany win the World Cup of Motorsports. Last year, he also won the prestigious Zandvoort Masters of F3, which took place at Zolder. You have to watch this kid in the rain. Currently, he is also a test driver for Williams, and we look forward to his arrival in Formula One soon. And this is very important. My thanks to Lars Kaufmann and our listener Mo Manzoor for making this interview possible, and to Peter Nygaard and Grand Prix Foto from Denmark for arranging Media Pass for me. So a lot of people are helping us, and we appreciate that very much. Please enjoy the interview, and my thanks to Nico Hülkenberg for his time. Danke schön. Okay, I'm here with one of my favorite young drivers, Mr. Nico Hülkenberg, and we are in Mugello. Nico, congratulations on winning the race one. How are you today, sir?
Not bad. After win, I think everybody's happy, and I'm feeling fine, and it's a good feeling to win this race today.
You won your first championship in karting at the age of 13. Please tell us, how long were you in karting and your best karting memories?
I've done karting for like 10 years. Started when I was 7, stopped when I was 18, and moved to Formula cars. But memories, I have a lot of good memories, because we were able to win a lot of championships, and I won the Italian championship in the junior class. Good memories from that. I have a lot of nice memories, because that was a nice time. I spent a lot of time in Italy in my youth, and I can't tell you what is my favorite memory.
Do you speak Italian also?
I did speak some words, but now I've lost some, yeah.
Okay. What is the most important thing you learn in karting that helps you in motor racing?
I think really the racing. It teaches you really how you race, because the races are very hard, and the races are very aggressive, and really need to fight a lot. And even, you know, sometimes they touch each other, and karting just teach you a lot about racing, I guess.
Okay. Who were some of the karters you raced against, and who do you respect as good racers?
In karting, I raced against a lot of people, like experienced, very old men in karting, is like Fauré or Sauro Cesetti, and very experienced drivers who did like 20, 25 years of karting, which were very experienced. And to race against them was really helpful and teach me a lot.
And among the drivers who are young like you and who have also moved into single-seaters, who were the karters who impressed you?
Ooh, I did a lot of fights with Sebastian Buemi in juniors, and then not so much in Formula A, but in karting I had a lot of fights with Plowman, Buemi, Oaks, and all these drivers also moved on to motorsport, and I still see them now here on the track.
You know, you mentioned Sebastian Buemi. Lars laughed and said to me, make sure you ask Hulkenberg about his best friend. And I said, who's his best friend? He says, Buemi. Is that true?
Who said it?
Lars Kaufmann.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes, yeah. No, I think I like Buemi. He's a nice guy. And we can have some hard fight on track. But, you know, after we can speak normally to each other. So I think I respect him and I know his talents. He's very quick. And I just kind of like him, yeah.
2005 was your first year in motor racing, and what a year it was. You won the BMW Championship, Formula BMW Germany, 8 wins, 9 poles, and 14 podium finishes. What was the secret to your success in your rookie season?
A good team, I guess. I really learned a lot from the team of Josef Kaufmann and his son, because they really gave me all their experience and gave me a lot of hints and tips to have a better season. And I think we had a very, very good team, and we worked very well together. And often I went to the team, stayed at their house, slept together with them or in the house, and we spent a lot of time together. And I think that was really the key of the success in that year.
Okay, now somebody like me who has never driven a race car, explain to me, you have the speed and you learn a lot of things from people like Kaufmann's. What are the things a driver can learn apart from the speed from a team owner or people around him?
A lot of things. Just if you start racing, especially racing in Formula cars, there anything is new. You don't know anything about braking, downshifting. You got to learn anything from the very peak. And Josef is very experienced, also because he's driven himself in his younger days, and he just was able to give me a lot of tips and made me learning quicker.
Very good. You also won the 2005 Formula BMW World Finals in Bahrain, at least on the track. Tell us why you were given the 10-second penalty.
Because there was an accident happened in the back of the field when I did the restart, and the stewards decided that it was my mistake why that accident happened, so they penalized me with a 10-second penalty.
Do you think the penalty was fair, and how disappointed were you as it took away an opportunity to drive a Formula One car?
For sure, very disappointed.
Be honest with me, did you cry?
Yeah, I did. For sure. Yeah, because I was very young, and it was really, really frustrating, because I spoke already to Tyson, and he said, okay, Formula One test, you come along, we make a seat. And then half an hour later, I was with the stewards, and they told me, you're penalized, you're only P3. And I was like, oh, shit, for sure. But it's hard to say, you know. The penalization on one side is correct, on the other side, not. But it's a difficult decision, but okay, I accept it.
In 2006, you moved up to German Formula 3 and started the first two races from pole position at Oschersleben. What are the main differences between Formula BMW and German Formula 3 car, and does it require different techniques of driving?
Cars are different because Formula 3 is more powerful. There's a lot more aerodynamic working also in slow speed corners than in BMW. In BMW, you have a lot of mechanical grip. I think it's a very good car to start your racing career, because it teaches you a lot about motorsport, about Formula cars. That's it.
2007, and this is where I really got interested in your career. You won your very first race in A1 GP competition and never looked back. And like I said to you earlier, the race I remember was the race at Sepang in the rain. And same year you won the Zandvoort Masters of Formula 3 at Zolder. What makes you so damn good in the rain? And that you are, I know.
I don't know if I'm so good. I think at that day we had a very good. I made a very good setup together with my engineer. We just took the right decision, because it was in Malaysia, and you never know, is it gonna rain and drying 10 minutes later or not. But we decided in the wrong direction, in the right direction, and took a rain setup. And I don't know about the other people, but I think also part of it is just that I really like to drive in the wet, because when I started karting, we did a lot of karting and running in Holland. And in the mini class in Holland, they don't have rain tires, so we had slick tires. And when it was raining, we kept slicks on, and it was very slippery. And it, you know, maybe I got the feeling for rain there.
Very good. It was an incredible performance. What stage in your career did Herr Willy Weber came into the scene?
That was the end of 2006. We got in touch because he asked me to do a test in his A1 Team Germany in Silverstone before the season. And that's how we got in touch.
How is he to deal with on a personal basis?
Willy is a really, really nice guy. I enjoy working with him. He has a lot of understanding of motorsport, and he really knows how this business works, and it's good to have a guy like Willy on the side, and he supports me really a lot.
Now, he has another German driver who retired a few years ago. Has that guy ever invited you over to his house for some, Hungarian goulash or some Beck's beer?
No, not yet.
Do you expect him to?
No, I don't.
Michael Schumacher gave you the award when you won the Team Germany won the championship. Have you had a chance to talk to him, like one-on-one?
Yeah, sure. But I knew him even from before. I've talked to him before. But even on that evening, we spoke quite a few sentences. And I think Michael is also a nice guy.
Have you ever asked him for some driving tips?
No.
Okay. You are now a test driver for Williams. How do you find the atmosphere in an all-guard Formula One team?
Very, very, very nice, to be honest. F1 is not easy because the team is very big. There are like 60, 70 people on the test team. Mm-hmm. And first it's difficult to get in touch with everybody and to remember their name on when you return back on track the next day. But I think, they received me, or how do you call it, when I went there. They were very a warm welcome from their side, and I really feel like comfortable and at home with them.
Patrick Head has a reputation for being very tough on his drivers, and this can be verified from Alex Zanardi and Heinz Harald Frentzen, especially when it comes to driver feedback. What is your experience in dealing with him so far?
When I met him first, it was very very relaxed and very good. We had a good conversation, and I thought he was a nice guy.
Okay. Now, Lars Kaufmann, your team owner's son, told me that you have two interests, your interest in motor racing is matched only by your interest in girls. So my question is, who is cuter, Danica Patrick or Susie Stoddard?
To be honest, I've never seen Danica Patrick in real life, so only on pictures, so I don't know really, but Susie is good looking, for sure.
Okay, good. Looking ahead, what is the plan for 2009?
That's really depending on this year, you know, how everything goes and what options we got at the end of the year. But the performance of this year will make the decision for next year, and, you know, which option I get, maybe or GP2 or maybe something else, I don't know. But I think GP2 is a very possible or high chance to do that.
You are knocking on Formula One's door. Let me ask you a question. As a very talented young driver with a tremendous track record, would you like to be racing in Formula One when you get to Formula One, or would you be open to like doing more testing for a team, a top line team? And Williams is a top line team, I would say, but just not having the success McLaren or Ferrari are having. What is your take on how you enter Formula One?
Well, sure, I want to race at one point, but I also give myself the time to prepare for Formula One, because when you move into Formula One, you really got to be ready for it. If you go there and the others beat you and you're last all the time, It's no good advertising for yourself. So I wait and prepare myself in Euro Series, GP2, or whatever is necessary. And when I feel I'm ready for it, then I will try to get a Formula One drive.
I was listening to an interview from Robert Kubica recently, and he said that winning is more than 50% thinking mentality. How much important is the positive attitude in having a successful racing career?
I think very, very important. He's right, because a race can be decided by mentally. You know, you need to be mentally very strong, and not only if you have somebody behind you and you're not allowed to make mistakes, but also otherwise you need to be very positive. You need to deal with your team with, I don't know, 50 different types of character. And yeah, just mentally it's very, very important to be strong and to be always in a good mood and to be just happy with what you're doing.
Can you tell us personally about yourself? What part you're from Emmerich, right, in Germany? Where is the town located, and what kind of music you like? Just a little personal things on that you would like the world to know about you.
Emmerich is close to Düsseldorf or Cologne, and it's very close to the Dutch border, actually, just 2-3 kilometers. It's not too big. It's like 30,000-40,000 people. It's very like green and a lot of fields with cows. It's not so exciting. Otherwise, I listen to pretty much every music, but also favorites a bit, like dance, trance, or house music and R&B. And otherwise, if I'm not racing, I like to do sports and also just to chill out with friends or go to the cinema and do some nice stuff.
Okay, we do this podcast from California. Have you been to the U.S., and do you follow any American racing series?
I've never been to USA. I'm following if I have time and it's on TV, I look sometimes the IIL or Chemka, yeah.
Okay. Any interest in Lynn Eskar?
Not really, to be honest.
Good. We like you even more now. Final question, request, a message for listeners of F1 Weekly. And we have listeners in Germany also, so if you could say a few words in Deutsches language, we will appreciate it.
To Deutschen, Deutschen Fans, ja. Freut mich, dass ihr das hier angehört habt. Habe das Interview gerne durchgeführt und vielleicht sehen wir uns wieder. Ich werde immer Gas geben und mein Bestes tun. Ciao.
And last question, and also a request. When you get to Formula One, will you give F1 Weekly another set of 15 minutes, please?
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you very much.
Nico, thanks very much for joining F1Weekly.com.
Okay, sir, now we come to our Looking Glass segment. We will look at maiden wins at Zandvoort as Brandy lays down some whiskey in this harbor town. The first time BRM ever saw a win was in the 1959 Dutch Grand Prix. Joe Bonnier won from pole position in his BRM. It was maiden win for Joe, the nation of Sweden, and the team. Bonnier turned out to be one-hit wonder. Unfortunately, in 1972, he lost his life at Le Mans. 1961, first Grand Prix win by a German driver. Wolfgang von Trips led the 75-lap race from start to finish. His Ferrari teammate from Santa Monica, California, Phil Hill, started from pole position and finished second. Jim Clark was third in his Lotus. Later in the season at Monza, von Trips was killed along with several spectators after he collided with Jim Clark's Lotus. There will not be another German Grand Prix winner till the 1975 Spanish Grand Prix, when Jochen Mass was declared the winner after the race was red flag following several fatalities when another German driver, Rolf Stommelin, crashed his Lola. He survived that day, but unfortunately he lost his life in a sports car crash at Riverside Raceway in Southern California in 1983. Mr. Monaco Graham Hill won five times in the Principality, but his first F1 success came in the Netherlands in 1962 at the wheel of another BRM. Wrigley moment doubled the pleasure in 1967 for Colin Chapman and former Co, Ford Motor Company. That was the first race for the DFV, and also what the, I think it was the Lotus 49 that came out that season, and Jim Clark was the driver. So it is a very historical day for debut win for the engine and for the car. And when you have Jim Clark in the cockpit, it shouldn't surprise anyone. 1968, first victory for Ken Tyrrell's Matra International team. The Ford-powered Matra MS-10 was driven by the V. Scott, who brought three championships to Team Tyrrell. JYS, also known as Jackie Stewart. 1975, with sponsorship and blessing from his good Lord Heskett, James Hunt took victory in the Dutch Grand Prix, a close finish in changing conditions also of over Niki Lauda, and this is a very, very popular first win. And of course, that was the one and only win for Heskett team. And then, of course, James Hunt win the World Championship with McLaren in 76. Next, we move on to balls in Haas F1 coat. The driver lineup will remain the same at Haas F1 in 2024. Kevin Magnussen will start his seventh season with the North Carolina-based team. Once upon a time, he was on the podium with McLaren in his Grand Prix debut. Papa was also a Rolling Stone in Formula One and did not listen to Ron Dennis when advised to stop smoking. It was the sight of Jan's messy suitcase at Tokyo Airport as he was searching for his passport, which led Ron, squeaky clean Dennis, to realize to make a change. And this is a true story. Playing ball with K-Mac next season at Haas will be Nico Hülkenberg. The German was once managed, as I already said, by Willy Weber, and his junior career was as impressive, as I already said, Lewis Schaal and some other top-notch drivers. All three won GP2/F2 in their rookie season. One pole position and no podium in over a decade of racing in Formula One is not impressive, but he has arrived in Piranha Pool without ever bringing a penny. In all his time in Formula One, Daniel Ricciardo was the only driver Nico could not overhaul, and this is when they were at Renault. F1 reject in, F1 reject out. Marcus Ericsson in for 2024 at Michael Andretti's team, Andretti Autosports, and I think they're going to let Romain Grosjean out, and it has not been confirmed whether Romain Grosjean will race for another IndyCar team or go back to Geneva and work for some bank. But I think he has a deal with the sports car team for next season, so he's not going to be in the unemployment line in Geneva. Okay, sir, now we come to points to ponder. Top 3 point scorers in F1 who did not score a win. And this is before the Dutch Grand Prix. Number 1, Ombre just mentioned Nico Hülkenberg. He has, before the Dutch Grand Prix, 530 points. Second, Lando Norris. I think he has 497 points before last Sunday. And third, Ombre just mentioned Romain Grosjean with 391 points. Okay, now we come to Formula 2. It's a boat race at Zandvoort. Sprint race on Saturday. This was a classic. Slightly more exciting than the 2021 Belgian Grand Prix. Harem Skerem on the opening lap led to a red flag. The restart was under safety car and soon turned into an Annie Lennox moment. Here comes the rain again and the race was stopped for good. Isaac Hadjar leading over fellow Francais Victor Martin with Oliver Behrman from UK. They were on the podium, 1, 2, 3. This kid, Oliver Behrman, Ollie Behrman they call him in racing circle, he is in the Ferrari Driver Academy and I have a feeling he could go all the way young and very quick. It was a pointless exercise for all since 2 racing laps were not completed, no points were awarded. So there you go. Now feature race on Saturday with man from Texas on pole, Jack Crawford. He is in the most energetic driver development program under the sun, Red Bull. The race was won by French driver Clément Novalak. I am told by his physio that his father is deceased. He was French and the mother is English and the kid lives in England, but he goes as a French driver. So Clément Novalak was the winner. Next we go to IndyCar racing from Gateway Oval near St. Louis, Missouri. Scott Dixon was the winner. Joseph Newgarden, who was hoping to win all oval races this season, touched the wall of voodoo and was not able to claim that prize. Okay, so very interesting. You remember this kid from Estonia, Yuri Vips? You know, he's the kid who is very talented. He used to be, he was in the Red Bull program till he used the N-word while playing a computer game with Liam Lawson during the COVID season, and then Red Bull cut him loose. So he has now been picked up by Bobby Rahal's team, which I think is a good idea. And he's going to do the final 2 races, the race this weekend at in Portland, Oregon, and then the season finale at Laguna Seca. Are you going to the Laguna Seca IndyCar race?
No, I am not, sir.
Okay. What about the Porsche Rennsport at the end of... that's at the end of September, right?
I believe first week of October. Yes, I am going to that, sir.
Okay. I'm going to call Frontier Airlines, see if they are offering free flight. And if they say, oh, yeah, then I might show up. But, you know, stay tuned on this one. Okay, sir, now we go to a series called USF Pro 2000. This is 2 steps below IndyCars. They were in action over the weekend in Austin at COTA, Circuit of the Americas. Penske-supported driver Miles Rowe still leads the championship. Final round of 3 races this weekend in Portland, Oregon. Now we come to the Italian job. Signor Stichi Damiani is the sharp-dressed boss man at ACI, the Automobile Club of Italy, people who run the Italian Grand Prix. Now the tax man is saying, "Buongiorno, signor, show me the hidden money." And apparently he has a lot of businesses and makes a lot of money, but the tax man sees very little of it. So we'll see how this thing works out. Okay, sir, now we come to penny wise and not pound foolish. Heineken is a Formula One sponsor with a global consumer base, not including Dennis Hopper. They have finally sold off their Russian business for €1 or 86 pennies, nearly a year and a half after first pledging to do so. It will cost the Dutch company a loss of €300 million on the division, which is being sold to Russian business called Arnest, maker of aerosol cans. I like the decency of the CEO, Dolf van den Brink, who said, and I quote, "It took much longer than we had hoped, but this transaction secures the livelihoods of our employees and allows us to exit the country in a responsible manner," unquote. The common man in any society should not pay the price for the a-hole actions of their leader. Comrade Rogers, you are a man of Stella Artois and Jupiler. What's your barley and hop on this issue?
I'm very proud of Heineken doing the right thing. I hope Haas takes note.
Very good. Okay, sir, looking ahead. This coming weekend, we have the mother of all motor racing. My all-time favorite motor racing event, the Italian Grand Prix at Monza. Okay, now race starts. What do we have? Curva Grande, Rettifilio, Lesmo Uno, Lesmo Due, Serraglio, Curva Ascari, Parabolica. And sir, Parabolica is my all-time favorite corner, and I wait all year long, and the TV feed of the opening laps when the cars are coming out of Curva Ascari and going like a snake on the long straight, back straight, heading towards Parabolica. That for me is the ultimate Gillette moment, the best a man can get. And I really, really enjoy that moment. And, you know, they have on the signs over the years, they've had signs for advertising for Martini, Lancia, diesel jeans, and now it's mostly Heineken or Qatar Airways. But I just enjoy this scenery immensely. And now I have to ask you, who's going to win this race after Fernando Alonso takes the checkered flag first?
Well, Max will have a DNF here. He may overdrive the car, and Fernando will benefit, and he will get his final victory before he retires. He will be heaped upon LCH and Nico Hülkenberg's shoulders, and they'll parade around.
Well, I hope it works out. I have a feeling that when Alonso wins the race, first person to congratulate him will be Lewis Hamilton.
With hugs and French kisses.
Ooh, very exciting. Okay, sir, we now come to Musical Mondial. Since Max is the only face at the top step of the podium these days, I thought we should invite Brian Ferry into the Palatial Studios to give his version of The Only Face. Thank you for listening. Please enjoy.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Have I ever known? You got me in the strangest mood. Just me, myself. No one else ever be so blue. No backstreet woman, no grand hotel. The only face out of place, an empty cell. I won't be alone. Me, myself, no one else, I wanna be alone. Available.